Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening.
Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, Art on a Journey, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and the Ypsilanti Food Co-op.
Jamie's Choice Awards by Jamie Cameron, Ground Cover Vendor Number 612. Best Thai Food, No Thai in Kerrytown. Best Billiards, The 8 Ball Saloon, downstairs from Blind Pig, or enter via the alley. There may be a cover charge. Best Dancing, depending on the day of the week, Necto off Liberty. There may be a cover and coat charge. It used to be called the Nectarine Ballroom. Best Cinnamon Buns, Cinnabon in Briarwood Mall near JCPenney. Best Cup of Coffee, Espresso Royale off Main near Liberty. Unfortunately, all locations are now closed. Best Seafood, The Black Pearl off Main Street near Liberty. Best Bookshop for Used, Buy, or Sell, The Dawn Treader off Liberty in downtown. Happy consuming!
Halloween is a real treat. What Halloween means to me is fun and treats. Halloween means to me a time to love God and Jesus more. Halloween means to me the same as Thanksgiving, being thankful to God for all God has blessed me with. I also like to have fun on Halloween, but not with spooky things. I like to celebrate Halloween with beautiful, colorful things. I like to dress up as a butterfly or a cat. I love watching the Charlie Brown Peanuts, It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. I like the joke that my boyfriend, Richard, don't discuss politics, religion, and the Great Pumpkin with anybody. This is part reality, though. Halloween also reminds me of the movie Cinderella, where her carriage was a pumpkin. Halloween reminds me of the Princess and the Frog movie, too. During Halloween, I also like to go to farmers markets because it's the harvest time of the year. All the fruits and vegetables are so colorful and pretty, they are delicious too. Halloween reminds me of candy and hot dogs and candy apples. French fries, too. Halloween reminds me of delicious popcorn, caramel popcorn, and buttered popcorn. Halloween reminds me of being with my friends at Halloween parties. Halloween is not just for kids. It's for anybody at any age who wants to have fun and enjoy treats and enjoy the holiday. It also reminds me of getting together with church groups and celebrating and getting treats. Halloween can be celebrated in many different ways. I enjoy them and accept spooky things. I like to celebrate God and Jesus in any holiday, including Halloween. By Denise Shearer.
Community Mental Health Public Safety Millage, What to Know Before November 5th. An article by Jim Clark, Ground Cover Vendor number 139. Nothing is certain but death and taxes. The death part is obvious. If you're a human being, you have an expiration date. But why are taxes certain? Because as long as you're alive and a human being, you or someone you know may need public services. Public services are provided by people running the government through programs and departments. The Washtenaw County government coordinates important services like community mental health and public safety. As we live in a society driven by money, these services need to be funded to pay employees and obtain resources, hence taxes. The Community Mental Health and Public Safety Preservation Millage was voted on in 2017, commenced in 2019, and is set to expire in 2026. It is up for renewal in the upcoming general election in order to avoid running a special election next year. The millage is a 0.1% tax that generates $15 to $18 million a year for Washtenaw County. $6 to $5 million go to CMH, the rest goes to Public Safety and the Sheriff's Office. The Washtenaw County Sheriff's Office provides services like animal, boating, and food and restaurant safety, disaster response, and 911 dispatch. CMH provides services like prevention, which is early diagnosis and mental health awareness campaigns, crisis intervention for people facing mental and or emotional stability challenges, stabilization, which includes programs that support the recovery of substance abuse and mental illness survivors and people with barriers to such services due to lack of resources or homelessness, and diversion, which is avoiding incarceration, ER visits, and rehab, while providing extra mental health and substance abuse recovery services for people in jail. The impact of these services is measured in the number of people helped. There is no public impact report for the funds allocated towards the Sheriff's Office. The impact of Washtenaw County Community Mental Health Services in 2023 are as follows. Substance abuse call line was answered approximately 250 times per month. The CARES team served 2.4 times more people that year than before the millage. The CMH crisis team visited 2,628 crisis calls in person, served over 2,200 children and young adults, provided over 300 hours of psychiatry, created more than 10 programs for the Washtenaw Intermediate School District, found emergency shelter for over 250 individuals, provided over 800 people with support services such as therapy and case management, created a co-response team with a mental health professional and a deputy who responded to over 540 emergency calls. An additional service that the millage would have provided for is the Crisis Stabilization Center, which is not currently open. Advocates have long been calling for accountability both in terms of individual programs the millage funds and particularly regarding the portion of the funds that go to public safety activities. Though there is reporting to involved agencies, the general public is often kept in the dark. Preceding the June 5th Board of Commissioners vote to restore and renew the millage on the November 5th general election ballot, the BOC passed an ordinance to create a Public Safety Millage Advisory Committee, MAC, that will provide oversight over the majority funds allocated to the Sheriff's Office. More details regarding this ordinance can be reviewed in the May 17, 2024 edition of Ground Cover News. Even with advisory committees, the public is unhappy with the expenditure accountability. Kat Layton, LLMSW, is a community-centric social worker and former employee of Community Mental Health. When asked for the most important thing for voters to know about the millage renewal, she had this to say. I was an employee at Washtenaw County Community Health from February 2022 to December 2022. During my short time there, it became evident that the Crisis Stabilization Center at 750 Towner was no longer operational due to staffing issues, shortly after its opening in June 2020. I later noticed, reviewing meeting materials from the Millage Advisory Committee, that despite this, funds from the Public Safety and Mental Health Preservation Millage continued to be allocated to the center. After noting this financial spending, it is concerning to see taxpayer money being allocated to a service that is no longer operational, especially when the pressing needs within our community could benefit from these resources, and the purposes of the millage funds are intended for these resources. I want to inquire why our millage funds have been directed to a crisis stabilization center over the last 2 years without providing that service. During the August 12, 2024 MAC meeting, CMH administrators acknowledged that the line item labeled Crisis Stabilization Center, visible on the bi-monthly and yearly financial reports, was allocated to the renovation of the 750 Towner facility, which does not seem in alignment with the original appropriation of these funds and millage monies. CMH administrators stated this location was being built up for transfer to another CMH department, rather than being utilized for the Crisis Stabilization Center services as initially intended. This raises significant concerns, considering that millage funds derived from the taxpayer contributions were allocated to support public safety and mental health services. Questions about openness and accountability are important, because if the millage is renewed, citizens should be able to monitor the associated expenditures. This includes whether funds are appropriated to reestablish the Crisis Stabilization Center, which, in addition to an emergency shelter based in Ipsy, is a greatly needed resource.
No matter who wins, don't forget the Americans. By LaShawn Courtwright. This is Cynthia Price reading for her. I wrote this article to draw out information from people who are economically challenged or poor. I interviewed five people about issues related to public policy in the election, and this is what they offered. Some said they are going to vote, and some said they will not, and some said that they are not yet 100% sure. They shared different perspectives on and about the current political climate in this year, 2024. Overall, it was agreed to by all five interviewees that the policies are far from resolved. If the individual presidential candidates, former President Donald J. Trump or Vice President Kamala D. Harris, and the embodiment of the political parties that must agree, forgot the purpose as they argue and finger point at one another, they are forgetting about the American people. Many of these people are the backbone of major industries as the labor force, and the other veins and arteries that support the vast array of billionaires and those who possess generational wealth. While they are undervalued, not even human, just a poor person. As a result, the information gathered from the poor results in policies that cause even more harm and wrongdoing. Policymakers imply that the wealthy could really actually benefit by modeling and utilizing the data that they've collected. The only thing that's apparent is that these benefits always backfire on the poor. I'm going to refer to the commenters as person A through E so that you don't know their real names. That should not matter. They want to just briefly comment on the issues and be open about their views and experience. Person A talks a little about how having monthly food stamp benefits eases the pull on your almost non-existent budget. Earned income slash unearned slash both. Then as you mature in your earned wages slash income, the food stamp program snatches the rug right back from under you. Then you are back at square one again, or worse off than when you began. So this benefit is needed and necessary. Its weaning function is ultimately counterproductive. Person B said that what good is a higher minimum wage when as soon as wages increase, the prices of everything else does too. It is like a hamster running fast in that big circle wheel, moving quickly, constantly getting nowhere. It only then serves as an illusion of what progress should look like. Person B is self-employed and doesn't tell anyone what they do. Person C's observations on healthcare are this. There are major areas of healthcare that would lose considerable profits if the government were to focus on providing oral healthcare that's affordable or free, or mandated dental practice coverage in health insurance policies. Chewing your food right is important to overall health, and a dentist can tell a lot about a person's health by their oral examination. Great research on aging and disease has been done and proven. Prevention is the best and most effective medicine. The patient must be able to trust the provider. For instance, this person may be a smoker or not be a smoker. If I can't trust you, then I won't be honest with you. If you prevent the ill, you don't or won't need the pill. This in itself would incept the beginning of eliminating expensive and unaffordable prescription costs for seniors, our children in the future, and for those who may now require it here and around the world. Person D says that everyone alive deserves to have a variety of nutritional dietary options. Why eat healthy when one small apple or orange is a dollar apiece? That's about 200 pieces of fruit for 30 days utilizing food stamps for a family. Some people get less than that. Nutrition and rest are essential to overall function, especially during the primary years of a child's life. It is right to help other children who are hungry to have food, but what about when your neighbor's child or your own child right here in the United States is starving? Where are the billions for them, for us? So I guess crime and hunger go hand in hand, Mr. Trump. No one in their right mind can believe that causing poverty won't challenge basic survival. No one has your number and is awaiting your call or action. Person E, the child tax credit is a good thing if they can model and re-implement that program. You can barely earn enough while working long, hard hours away from your child to simply provide nutritional meals. That doesn't even begin to address who will offer safe, effective, and essential components of childcare that is also affordable. The consensus when it came to the tax and budget part of the issues. There were chuckles, giddy grins, and smiles on the faces of the interviewees. This is their persnickety response. We don't have any income to report, and we already know our budget. Scrape by on what's left, barely nothing.
Voting While Homeless, Accessible Yet Unequal by Amelia Isaacson and Ginger Johnston. The 2024 presidential election is an extremely close race by all polling numbers, with the Silver Bulletin by data journalist Nate Silver predicting just a 2% lead for Vice President Kamala Harris over former President Donald Trump. While the foundations of U.S. democracy include the right to vote as an important vehicle for citizens to self-govern, a tight election makes each vote all the more important. With every vote counting, the vote of people experiencing homelessness becomes even more critical. As of 2016, the voting rate of low-income individuals was 46%, compared with a rate of 67% for people with incomes above twice the poverty line, according to a study done by Columbia University. As of 2020, U.S. News reports that only 1 in 10 people experiencing homelessness cast their vote. The Detroit Press writes that many barriers to voting among those facing homelessness include misconceptions. People who are experiencing homelessness, as well as the general public, may not know that people without a permanent address can legally vote, or what kind of identification is needed to cast their ballots. The voices, votes, and opinions of low-income voters and those experiencing homelessness in Washtenaw County are more important than ever, given the continuing reality of lack of affordable housing, specifically the lack of political and public will to better fund low-income housing. The Washtenaw Housing Alliance found that in Washtenaw County, the standard cost of a two-bedroom apartment can be $1,471 per month, a monthly rate more expensive than 98% of the rest of the state. When faced with issues such as these, voting empowers citizens to advocate for the change they want to see through political participation. The role of the Michigan Secretary of State is to ensure free and fair access to voting. Local election officials who manage the voting process are trying to educate people experiencing homelessness about voting and the voting process. Grace Bartley, a member of the Washtenaw chapter of the League of Women Voters, works to clear up these misconceptions. It's more about making sure that people are registered to vote and letting people know that registering is a thing they can do, Bartley said. The League of Women Voters also comes out with a voting guide of information, which is pretty cool. We're going to start distributing it. Bartley is correct. As any citizen over the age of 18 not currently serving time for a felony conviction can vote in the state of Michigan, including those experiencing homelessness. People can register without a house or apartment address by using a street corner, shelter, or park as their place of residence. With a state ID, one can register online. Another option includes bringing a letter from a public assistance program or a shelter to the township clerk's office for proof of residence. Additionally, when prompted for an ID at the polls, individuals can request to fill out a statement that they do not have a photo ID. By casting their votes, those experiencing homelessness offer a valuable and often marginalized perspective on candidates and their platforms, from the local to the national level. Trudy Hughes, a League of Women Voters member, argues that a major barrier between homeless people and voting is feeling isolated and irreverent to their government. I think there's a lack of connection to the elected officials to feel that they are making a difference in their life, Hughes said. It's the barrier of not feeling like their vote is going to make a difference. Many similar organizations are working to spread information about available options for voters experiencing homelessness. For example, the Michigan Secretary of State's office has partnered with Michigan Coalition Against Homelessness to educate voters and offer registration clinics. Locally, the Shelter Association of Washtenaw County here in Ann Arbor offers assistance with voter registration.
On September 21st, from 2:30 to 4:30 p.m., the SAWC hosted an event at the Delana Center in which attendees could learn about their right to vote. On the first floor, there was lunch provided, along with representatives from Ambassadors from Voting Access for All Coalition to provide information on early voting, absentee voting, and more as a person experiencing homelessness. On the second floor, attendees had the opportunity to meet privately with a representative from the League of Women Voters to check their registration status. The SAWC is putting on another event in October to register clients to vote. However, regardless of how pure the intentions were going into the event, it was clear that voting was not high on unhoused people's priority list. Most people in attendance buzzed past voting workers on their way to get lunch provided by the shelter, as they simply needed to eat. After witnessing what people experiencing homelessness go through on a day-to-day basis, it seemed silly to think that those who were struggling to find a place to sleep at night or their next meal would care about an election, especially since a lot of these people feel they have been excluded in the policies and agenda of our government. Also in attendance was Gail Summerhill, the founder of Ipsy Can I Share, a program dedicated to equalizing information for those excluded by our government, that is specifically for people of color and impoverished individuals. Summerhill was disappointed in the event. She felt it was sick to expect homeless people to step up and vote while our government continually ignores their needs at the local and national level. People who are at the lowest point in their lives are not thinking about voting because their basic needs are not being met, Summerhill said. If you haven't done anything but suppress these people, what do you expect from them? As we move forward as a democratic country, it is crucial to equalize voting and to ensure accessibility to all citizens. Voting is the foundation of our country and the heart of every citizen's inherent voice in our democracy, so we must continue to break down the barriers for the marginalized voices of people experiencing homelessness and work to equalize voting accessibility. As we look at this year's close election, the mobilization of such a large voting bloc could very well make the difference between candidates. Still, while we must not expect the silence to jump at the opportunity to vote, it is important that these communities know that they have an opportunity and a choice to exercise their democratic right.
A2 Downtown Coffee Shop Extravaganza, Cindy Gear, ground cover vendor number 279. In the past 2 years, we have seen an explosion of coffee houses across Ann Arbor. What I find very intriguing is that each coffee shop does not just serve coffee, but has its signature features, whether it be Happy Fairy Doors or the connection to the LGBTQ community. Each coffee shop is not just a coffee shop. They are meeting ups, gatherings, social events, and meeting locations. coffee plays a huge role in the morning, the ritual of putting one's self out of bed is like crossing the Grand Canyon each morning. But one thing most people can agree on is the very first tasty sip that brings one back to life. As I walked around downtown, I realized that 10 years ago, coffee was but a ghost of it, current self. Only a handful of coffee shops existed. Then, Espresso Royale, Starbucks, and Sweetwater's, not to mention Cloverleaf and the Fleetwood Diner. What we have now is amazing because you don't need to get off your route to find a coffee shop. The coffee shop will pop up wherever you now walk. Yippee! What an amazing convenience. I will now list many of the coffee shops, but what makes each most agreeable? Betty and Boo's was founded by the White family in honor of their two children, Betty and Boo's, who have Down syndrome. It changes the way people see other people. Just opened, the Mocha and Company is a wonderful specialty Yemeni coffee shop, Yemeni owned and operated. This coffee shop came about through family tradition from Yemeni. The grandparents wanted to bring to America the delightful full taste of sun-dried, non-pesticide, all-natural coffee with a touch of Cameroon spice called Smoky Spice Blend with a full down-home flavor. Coho's has a wonderful modern quiet atmosphere with high ceilings and abstract paintings. It is an LGBTQ friendly and gender neutral space. This coffee shop is a co-working space and has a great back room area for large events like group meetings and gatherings. House of Chimney Cake is a very child-friendly atmosphere covered in the delightful color pink, my personal favorite, with wonderful pink roses and a happy photo of angel wings. These yummy ice cream delights and milkshakes, sherbets with no milk, hit the spot every time. Hyperion is a very strong customer interaction community. Here, many have become friends, in part because the shop is so small. Hyperion has a direct relationship with the farmers and ethically sourced coffee right in your cup. At Rue's Roast, the staff are super friendly and extremely helpful. The other point is a warm atmosphere and very agreeable location, close to ground cover and the bus station. If you want to see good artwork and display, Rue's Roast is the place to go. My personal favorite is the Miss Pac-Man table. Sweetwater's is a long-established coffee house. They recently celebrated their 30-year anniversary. Kids come to Sweetwater's to see the Fairy Door display by Jonathan B. Wright at the Ashley and Washington location. There are still fairy doors around Ann Arbor, too. Hunt and see. Place a token for the fairy who lives there. And don't forget to make a wish every time. The artwork on the walls are for sale all year long. There is a wonderful meeting area in the back for business and groups. For the furry friends, there are happy pup cups, whipped cream, yum yum. Le Bon Macaron is a wonderful French-inspired cafe that has a large variety of colorful, tasty macaroons. Pina colada, violet, and rose are on the menu. All syrups are made in-house with Italian and French sodas. Their white spring atmosphere with chandelier lighting is so quaint. At Canals, the outdoor seating area brings on a truly tropical sensation. You will feel totally relaxed as you step inside. Super modern, soft music greets you for a quiet study area. Canella is known for its large variety of pastries and yum-yum eclairs and amazing smells. Vendor Cuba tells us it's the best espresso around town. Mr. Cuba says it can't be beat. At Tostique's, live plants greet each customer in a warm, modern atmosphere with a down-home feeling and happy smiles. Each coffee is ethically sourced from Ethiopia, and the chocolate is from Brazil. My favorite is the healthy boost shots, which are great during the cold season, all along with good soup and sandwich. Cinnaholic, make your own yum-yum cinnamon bun creation with a large variety of toppings to choose from. The smells are to die for. Come get a taste of happy today. Bakehouse 48 has a very large variety of tasty cupcakes with seasonal ones as well. They are very kid-friendly, and they offer sandwiches, donuts, cookies, and bagels. But by far the most fun are the tiny mouth-watering mini baby cupcakes that everyone loves. Shinola Cafe is one quiet with a calm atmosphere and a speakeasy vibe. With the low light and a comfortable setting, a wonderful workspace for being on a laptop. They offer a single original espresso with a large variety of music. The popular cafe Argus Farmer's Stop offers a one-stop shop for 7 days a week hyper-local farmers market. The relaxed mood makes a great meetup location for family and friends. They are a consignment model. 70% of the sales of goods and food go to the producer. Very down-home atmosphere. Downtown Home and Garden is the location for the truly cheapest coffee in the town, and it has a very homey atmosphere. And don't forget, happy puppy treats. Duncan is brand new to the scene on Liberty. Tasty donuts with cute happy donut holes. A second location is to open on the corner of Williams and State Street very soon. That concludes 16 shops for your delight. Take a tour of the shops. Try out new tasty treats. You never know what you will find that will change your mind and become a very new favorite yum yum.
Hello, this is the voice of Will Shakespeare of Grand Cover News. The title of our recording today is Celebrating 2024 National Hispanic Heritage Month. All right. The theme of this year's celebration of Hispanic and Latino Heritage History Month is Pioneers of Change. And the subtitle is Shaping the Future Together. For a long time, Hispanic and Latino Americans have celebrated their cultural heritage and history in California, Texas, and other regions of the country. In the late 1960s, U.S. President Lyndon B. Johnson signed a federal law which initiated Hispanic Heritage Week. It became a national celebration which was observed in every state, city, and town in America. In the 1980s, U.S. President Ronald W. Reagan signed legislation which changed the week-long celebration to a month-long celebration, in bracket, September 15 to October 15. In Washtenaw County, the Hispanic and Latinx Heritage Month is celebrated in many public schools, colleges, and universities. It is also celebrated in city halls, county buildings, churches, and some workplaces. At the University of Michigan, the Office of Multi-Ethnic Student Affairs and the Office of Academic Multicultural Initiatives work with groups of students, staff, and faculty to design programs and schedule events which capture the interest of the campus and off-campus communities. The Michigan Daily Student Newspaper publishes lists of events from September to October and beyond. At Eastern Michigan University, events which celebrate Hispanic and Latino heritage are posted in the university's student newspaper, the Eastern Echo. Across the nation, there are celebrations in public institutions such as libraries and the Smithsonian Museum. They feature guest speakers and some motif of cultural expressions, which include art, movies, music, salsa dancing, cultural foods, and storytelling, to mention a few. More recently, Hollywood actors and comedians of Hispanic and Latino ancestry have started to challenge the younger population to learn more about their Latino history. They want the young folks to appreciate the sacrifices made by the pioneers of change. actor and comedian John Leguizamo said that young Hispanic and Latino Americans should take pride in the ancient civilizations of the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Incas, Olmecs, and other indigenous peoples of Mesoamerica. Young Hispanic and Latino Americans are also reminded that they will inherit the future, and they have the responsibility to work hard and use today's technology to help share the future of their community and their nation. They are challenged to make meaningful contributions to American society, just as their parents, their grandparents, and their great-grandparents have done over many generations. This is a presidential election year. Presidential candidates of the two major parties, Democrat and Republican, are campaigning for all ethnic votes, including the Latino vote. With rapid demographic transition, Americans of Hispanic and Latino ancestry have gained enormous political power. The U.S. Census records show that in 1960, Americans who identified as Hispanic or Latino were 6.7 million and accounted for about 6.5% of the national population. Today, it is estimated that the population of Hispanic and Latino Americans is about 67.5 million, and they account for about 19.7% of the national population. Approximately 66% of the Hispanic and Latino population in America are eligible to vote. Their votes can make a difference in presidential, congressional, gubernatorial, and down ballot elections in November. Recent poll data show a tight race between Republican and Democratic nominees for president. The Latino vote will be vital in the battleground states, especially Arizona and Nevada. The Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. now has a National Museum of the American Latino. The museum curators want Americans to celebrate the achievements and contributions of Hispanic and Latino Americans in all fields of human endeavors. However, it is also important to embrace the civic knowledge and historiography of the Hispanic or Latino Americans' experience. What are the costs and consequences of the Spanish colonization of Latin America and the Caribbean? What happened after the Spanish-American War? Why did Spanish Texas declare independence from Mexico and opt to join the Union? What caused the Mexican-American War? Why was the border changed in 1848? Who benefited from the boundary change? Who lost territories and population? educational consultant, Dr. E.D. Hirsch, wrote the bestseller titled Cultural Literacy and What Every American Needs to Know. He implores every American, including Latino Americans, to open up our minds and make a commitment to a lifetime of learning and reflection. When we learn, we can boldly and courageously engage in conversations, dialogues, and debates on a wide range of topics. If we are able to answer the questions outlined before, we may begin to maximize our cultural literacy, harness our multicultural excellence, and make members of our Latino community very proud. Gracias, amigo. Gracias, amiga. Finally, I asked 6 Latino Americans from Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti how they celebrate Hispanic and Latino Heritage Month. They started their answers with extra spicy Mexican or Caribbean food, some drinks, some music, and some dancing. Most of them prefer house parties, and 2 of them would like to celebrate at the Frita Badidos restaurant in downtown Ann Arbor. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tricks Are Not Treats by LaShawn Courtright, ground cover vendor number 56. There is no treat in being dehumanized. The trick is to put it in, whereas it is the equal of wearing a disguise. I'm not spooked by it. It's so obvious. Open your eyes. Peekaboo. Let's all come to civil agreements. I like to say for this, we're more wise.
Truth or Lies, The Golden Halloween by Felicia Wilbert, ground cover vendor number 234, read by me, Lindsay Kalka. It was October 30th, 1998. Martis was sitting around the bonfire. It was his first bonfire party at his grandparents' estate. He had just inherited the estate earlier that year. He was sitting by the fire, drinking wine with his neighbors and friends, reminiscing on all the stories his grandpa used to tell him. The main story on his mind was how they would light up the lanterns the night before Halloween. It was to honor the men who worked in the mountains during the gold mine era. A crew of 50 men were trapped during a sudden earthquake. Martis was proud that he had kept his grandfather's tradition. After the party settled down, several people were asleep around the fire. When he woke up, the fire was still blazing, but the lanterns were out. He could not understand how they were not lit. He didn't hesitate relighting them. However, the first one blew out as he lit the second one. He looked down the path at each lantern. They started flickering on and off. Martis thought someone had walked past him, feeling a warm breeze. He decided not to light the lanterns again. Walking away, Martis turned back and all the lanterns were lit. While entering the house, he noticed a pattern of lights without lanterns. He walked into the path of lights, looking around to see where the pattern of lights would lead him. He stood in the hallway. The bathroom door opened up suddenly. He jumped nervously. It was his friend Fernando stumbling out of the bathroom. He was relieved to see Fernando. Martis decided to return to the bonfire with his friends. Several people had awakened and they were telling spooky stories of Halloween. After his guests had left, Martis cleaned up the kitchen. Sweeping the floor, he noticed a pattern of lights once again. This time the lights were moving back and forth. They were quarter-sized, blinking lights. He stopped then, walked over to them. The lights moved. He moved forward. They moved again. He moved again. Then he stopped. The lights stopped blinking. Suddenly, his grandpa's picture fell off the wall in the living room. He went to see what it was. He picked up the picture and noticed lights all over it. He dropped the picture and the lights disappeared. Martis picked it up and hung it quickly. He sat down on the sofa, spooked. Did he really just see the lights on his grandpa's picture? Martis' throat got dry and his body started shaking. He felt someone tapping him on the back of his right shoulder. Martis turned around to see who had touched him. He only saw blinking lights on the floor and he heard footsteps. The lights moved. He jumped up and decided he was going to follow them again. This time he wouldn't give up. The thought of his friends laughing eased the tension in his neck. The footsteps started again. Frightened, he continued to follow the lights. The light shone on the wall outside of his grandfather's bedroom. He heard a tapping sound on the wall to the floor. He shouted, "You can come out now. The prank is over. The joke is on you." A few minutes passed. No one came out. The sound got louder. His heart started beating faster. He walked over to the wall to see what the lights were shining on. Glancing up and down the wall, looking towards the floor, he noticed a sparkle and a glimmer. Peeking beneath the floor and the wall, it was a small hole that wasn't noticeable the day before. The tapping got louder, the hole got bigger, the glare became brighter. He wanted to run, but he could not move. He was so afraid he passed out. Hours later, when he awakened, it was nighttime. He jumped up, thinking about how he was supposed to attend a Halloween party with his friends. Reaching to turn the lights on, he dropped a gold coin from his hand. He looked down to see where he had dropped it. The coin rolled into the hole on the floor. As Martis reached to retrieve it, the hole got even bigger. The glare was so bright, he decided to get a hammer and chisel. Finally, he took the hammer to pound a bigger hole in the floor. The glare was so bright, he forgot to cut the lights on. Skeptical, he put his hand in the hole, grabbing at whatever he touched. He pulled his hand out of the hole. Looking into his hand, he saw small gold nuggets. He jumped up and cut the light on. There was gold everywhere in the hole. When he excavated the hole, he found a note from his grandpa that said, "My only grandchild, take this wealth and build houses. The gold is from 1829. My great-grandpa left it for me. Now it's yours. Love you, Grandpa." Author's note, please forgive me for not showing up. I encountered family difficulties that couldn't be avoided. Truth or Lies, Mystery Lane, Winter, published on June 14th, 2024, was true.